Reading with your kids.
Hola, ni hao, konnichiwa, assalamu alaikum, shalom, mahava, ciao, bonjour, namaste, jumbo. Bienvenidos. Hey, my name is Jed Lee. Welcome to Reading with Your Kids. We are coming to you from the beautiful, wonderful, historical neighborhood of Reedville, located in the southwest corner of Boston, Massachusetts. We are so very honored and absolutely delighted that you're joining us in our mission to help all families grow closer through reading. We do that by sharing fun, thoughtful, and thought-provoking conversations with fascinating people who just happen to be writing books for kids of all ages. You can join us in our mission by telling all of your family and friends about the show and letting them know that they can hear us on the WREB AM-FM 24/7 radio network. And they can find us on the iHeartRadio app, on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Good Pods, Podcast Addict, Amazon Music, CastBox, Audible, Player FM. Wherever you find your favorite shows, you can find Reading with Your Kids. Two amazing guests coming your way this episode. Allison Olsen is here to celebrate Surrounded by Love, an open adoption story. And later in the show, celebrating his brand new picture book, his debut picture book called The Fib, Pedro Iniguez. This episode of Reading with Your Kids is brought to you by Careful What You Hear, a wonderful middle grade novel by Helen Dunlop Newton. Noah Baker is not an average 13-year-old. He's a mind-reading secret agent. Ever since a mix-up gave him an experimental cochlear implant, he and his partner Lena have been going on spying missions for the government. Now they're in for a reward for all of their hard work, space camp. Their fun threatens to melt away when Noah overhears thoughts revealing a plot to steal secret plans from nearby Redstone Arsenal. Should Noah report what he heard and risk losing a chance to compete in the end-of-camp mission with Lena? Or should he keep quiet and risk bad people winning again? Careful What You Hear is the sequel to Helen's very popular Do You Hear What I Hear? Get your copy today. You and your kids are going to love it. Careful What You Hear by Helen Dunlop Newton. Also want to let you know that this episode of Reading With Your Kids is brought to you by Once Upon a Dance. Once Upon a Dance, they create books that move you. Literally. Once Upon a Dance turns story time into a dance-along adventure. Build confidence, create connection, and enjoy screen-free fun. With over 600 awards and 3,000 five-star reviews, these interactive tales inspire kids to jump, twirl, and imagine. They inspire you, too. Find your next adventure at onceuponadance.com. They're available wherever books are sold online. Check it out today. Once Upon a Dance, books that move you. Literally. Before we invite our guests into the studio, I would love to invite you to visit a very special website. It's clownswithoutborders.org. clownswithoutborders.org. This is a group that I absolutely adore. I am part of Clowns Without Borders, and I had the honor of being part of the 2023 tour of El Salvador. I had so much fun joining with artists from all over the world to bring a smile to people who really needed it and really appreciated it too. And we would love for you to join us as a monthly joy maker. The joy makers, they're a family of people just like you who love to laugh and make other people feel good. So please take a moment and visit clownswithoutborders.org and consider joining me as a joy maker. I'm really looking forward to our conversation this evening. If you've been listening to the show, you know that I hold adopted parents in high regards. I think that they are incredible people. They make incredible sacrifices, and it's just a beautiful thing that a family can open up their heart and their home to one of the almost 400,000 kids that are in the foster care system here in the United States on any given day. And so we're going to be talking about adoption with the author of Surrounded by Love. It's a great new series from our guest, Allison Olsen. Allison, welcome to Reading with Your Kids.
Thanks for having me on, Jed. Appreciate it.
Delighted to have you on. I should start off by mentioning that you are one of the heroes that I celebrate in that you opened your heart to somebody who needed a home.
Yeah, and I am adopted as well. So I was adopted back in 1979 through a domestic infant adoption, and my adoption was closed. That was very common in 1979. That just means you do not know actual information, names, right, about the birth family. And then our daughter, our youngest daughter, is adopted similarly through a domestic infant adoption, but the main difference is that hers is an open adoption. Mm-hmm. So we have a very close relationship with her birth mom and her birth family. And that's a big change in the adoption world between 1979 and now, right? Mm-hmm. So about 90% of adoptions are open these days.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, you know, on the I can see arguments for both, but at this point in time with technology, a closed adoption doesn't seem like it's going to be closed for very long. You know,
that's correct.
With DNA and whatnot. So it probably makes sense to just deal with it and be open right from the start.
Exactly. And they've done a ton of psychological studies with adoptees, and it is just much more beneficial to know where we come from, to have medical history, to be able to communicate with our family, all of that. But it's just the healthiest for the adoptee.
Yeah. So Surrounded by Love, there's three books in your series. Why don't we start first with the original, Surrounded by Love, an open adoption story.
Yeah. So I did not set out to become a children's book author. It just happened. I was preparing for the birth and adoption of our youngest daughter, and we had the nursery all ready, and I had bought a big stack of books that were kind of the highly recommended children's adoption books. And I started reading them, and again, having a different perspective, being adopted myself, I was reading through them, and the messages just, they were not resonating to me as the story I wanted to share with our daughter. So there were a couple themes in there that were a little off-putting. So some of them really had this like lucky narrative, that the adoptive parents came in and saved them, and you know, what would they be without the adoptive parents? And that they've done plenty of studies, has very long-term negative effects on children, like having that feeling that they're not good enough in and of just themselves, you know, that they needed someone else to make them better. And there, like I said, lots of studies around that causes people pleasing and all these other things that can go down bad routes. And the other thing I was seeing as a pattern in the books was like an imbalance. So if they talked about the birth mom or the birth family at all, they would talk about them differently than they'd talk about the adoptive parents. Okay. And so when a birth mom comes to adoption and when adoptive parents come to adoption, they usually come with both struggle and love. Mm-hmm. And the struggle is, you know, a crisis pregnancy on the birth mom side. The struggle in the adoptive parents' side is infertility, or the only way to grow their family would be through adoption. And these books tended to talk about the struggle from the birth mom, mm-hmm. and the love from the adoptive parents. And so it felt very imbalanced. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I could have picked struggle and struggle. But the truth is, when it comes to children's books, like, you think about the farm books, right? The farm books are happy, and they're lovely, and they talk about the farm animals and the crops and the sun, and you know, they don't talk about that it's grueling, like 10-12 hour days for the farmer to do the work. So the route that I was going down and the story I wanted our daughter to hear was how much she was loved and how much she was the center of her own story, and that she was loved from the birth mom side and she's loved from the adoptive parent side. And there were a couple things imagery wise that were important to me to show the birth mom equally as many times as the adoptive parents, to show like this equalness in the love. In addition to, there were not a lot of books that actually have the birth mom illustrated. So it was very important to me that she was clean, that she was pretty, that she was representative of something that you would want your child to see reflected in a book, right? We don't want there to be some false pretenses around people of some stereotype that very likely isn't true, right? Yeah. And so that stuff was all very important to me. And then the one thing that I love is my illustrator. So her name is Darlie Urbiz Tondo, and she's amazing. She goes by Happy Lee. That's her nickname. And her illustrations are just that. They're happy. They're like bright. The background is beautiful in all of them. Here, let me grab this one to show you. But the Easter egg that I love to share only in like moments like this that she threw in is that each of the characters has a main color, right? So the birth mom you'll see in pink all throughout the book, adoptive mom in yellow, adoptive dad in blue. And this is in the original version. And you'll notice the adoptee has one of each color on her. And she is that way all throughout anytime that you see her in the book, just to reflect how important each of these individuals are to this adoptee as she grows up. Yeah. And that I keep consistent in my two newest books. So my two new versions are the same exact book, but with representation for the LGBTQ plus community. Mm-hmm. So I have two adoptive dads version and two adoptive moms version. And they both have similarities of that same Easter egg of the young adoptee representing the colors of all of the main characters in the book.
Yeah. I love that. You know, oftentimes I will ask authors, especially authors of traditionally published books who have very little, if any, communication with their illustrators, you know, is it difficult to kind of let somebody else tell part of your story? And it's obvious in this case, your illustrator brought something very special and unique and something that you love to the story.
She did. And she does that for every book that we create together. Every time I get an email from her, I am so excited because I know I'm going to open it up and it's just going to be amazing. And I will tell you, my second book that I created, she's the one that helped to really bring it to life. It was one that my editor kind of struggled with. Uh-huh. And it was only when I talked to my illustrator that she said, oh no, I see this. I envision the whole thing. And she was able to take my kind of dream and thoughts and my story. I mean, it was fully written and edited at this time, but she was able to take it and bring it to life. And that one is called Learning About My Friend's Adoption. Okay. And it is one of the first books ever created to help kids that are not adopted learn about adoption in a very fun, kid-friendly way that normalizes adoption. And honestly, as someone who is adopted, it's a lot of the same questions that I was asked and that, you know, would still be asked today. And so it starts with this little boy, and he's at the dinner table with his family, and he's just explaining like, hey, I learned something today from my friend. You know, she's just like you and me. She likes to build rocket ships, dance, and play dress up. But she's adopted, and I had never heard that word before. I didn't know what it meant. So here's the story she told me. And then it goes through their day at daycare, and he's asking her questions and she's answering them. Ah. So it just basically answers their questions before they even can think of them to ask. Mm-hmm. And so it's a great book to have at schools, at libraries. If you're uncertain about how to explain adoption to your child, and there's a neighbor that's about to be adopting, you know, it's just a great way to explain it. Because I have, after this book came out, I had a lot of people come to me and thank me because they said, I thought I knew how to talk about adoption until I started to say, You know, and the neighbor example is actually a real one where someone came up to me and said, I did not know what to say to my kids because, you know, the neighbor down the street was not going to be pregnant and they were waiting on adoption. And she's like, and I was started to tell the kids like, oh, I'm so, you know, I'm so excited. They're about to adopt. And the kids are like, what does that mean? And she's like, I didn't know what else to say. And so I'm like, this is just a great way because it's the questions and answers back and forth. And it helps to normalize stuff. So here's another phrase. Let me see if I can find it quickly or not. Where he's asking her, I will find it, where he's asking her, you know, he says, oh, so you have two moms. And then she's like, well, I actually have two entire families. And then he asks her, do you love both of your families? And he scratches his head because he's very confused. Like, do you love them? This is like a real child question that they would be asking. And it says, my friend giggled. Yes, of course I love them both, just like you love your family. And it's done intentionally. The giggle is intentional to just normalize it and to say our family is actually not that different from your family, even though I have a biological family and I have an adoptive family.
Yeah. Well, I love the idea to let a child know that they were loved from the moment they came into the world. And in the case of my kids, before they came into the world. And by the people who chose to bring them into their family. I think that's an important message. Even, you know, I can't imagine sitting down thinking, oh, I'm adopted. I'm 7 years old. Why did this happen? It'd be so much better to be able to say, hey, kid, you know, your mom loved you. She wasn't able to take care of you. For this reason, that reason, right? It had nothing to do with you. She made this choice because she loved you, because she thought this would be best for you.
That's exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have to tell you, I'm going to be very open and honest with you. You know, probably 15 years ago, maybe, when I think there was a controversy here in Massachusetts where the Catholic Church, Catholic Charities, were responsible for a lot of the adoptions. But they said, you know what? We prefer to have a family with a mom and a dad adopt the kids in our care. And the Commonwealth of Massachusetts said, nah, you got to open up. And so the Catholic Church said, well, it's kind of against our thing. And so we're going to tap out and, you know, wish you all best. And at that time I was like, oh, yeah, you know, a mom and a dad, that's kind of basic. I kind of think that's important. But then I had an experience. I was performing one of my educational magic shows in Northern Maine, and, I had this thing where I used to hand out a few little green beads, and I'd ask the kids that were holding on to them to think about something they were thankful for, and I was going to collect them and do something magical with them. And on this one particular day, there was the young man at the back of the auditorium. When I came to him and I said, "What are you thankful for?" He said, "Gently, no, the people here don't know me. I'm new to this school, but I'm thankful for my family. I have two dads now, and it's the first time in my life that I've had a family of my own. And so I'm thankful for my two dads." And at that moment I said, well, I was wrong. You know, and it's like, yeah, you know, if a kid gets a home, hopefully it's a loving, caring home. Then, you know, if it's two dads, two moms, one dad, one mom.
Exactly.
You know, a dog, a dad and a golden retriever. No, I'm kidding about that. But, you know, I think it's the family, I think, is what's most important.
I completely agree. And that's such a lovely story. And I think that it's important for us all to know that and keep that in mind. And I think that the more imagery we can see, in books and in movies and TVs, the more it will normalize it for us, right? So you think about shows like Modern Family, right? Modern Family was around for so long, and it truly was representative of the way more modern families look, right? And then all of a sudden, it was in people's households. I don't know, 3, 5 times a week. I mean, those reruns play a lot. And then everyone's getting exposed more to, oh, two dads and they're loving dads and oh, they're kind of funny and, and all of that is, it's really important. And so that is part of why I wanted this representation. I think it's important for adoptees to know their story, be able to pull a book off the shelf and be like, this represents us, and my family is normal, is love, that's what I wanted to show with these books.
Wonderful. Are you planning, since this is a series, are you planning on tackling the issue of interracial adoption? I know I
Excellent
have,
question.
yeah, so go for it.
Yes. Okay. So, that is an absolutely excellent question. So to be able to answer that, I need to first explain that with adoption comes trauma. And when you say the word trauma, people do get a little sensitive because trauma can mean different things to different people. But even in my case, where I was, went straight from the hospital to my adoptive family's home, right? And same with our daughter as well. There is trauma involved because the baby bonds with inside the womb of the mother. There is bonding. And then when they're looking for those sounds, they do not hear those sounds because they do not live in the house with the mother. And so there is trauma there. Then when you talk about a transracial adoption, so the child is of a different race than the parents, there's extra layers of that on top of it. And so I don't feel like in my experience being a white woman that I can correctly represent that with necessarily the same language. So like in all three of these books, it's the same exact language across, just different representation. I feel like there's some extra components that need to be of the adoptive parents celebrating the culture of the adoptee. There needs to be components like that included and involved in it. And my hope is that more transracial adoptees will be writing these books. There are some that have been written, but I'm hoping that they can write more. If in a couple of years there aren't enough on the shelves, I might partner with a transracial adoptee to make sure their voice is being heard in the story, because that's one I think that I may not do enough justice representing as who I am.
Yeah. Well, that's an incredibly honest answer, and I really appreciate it. It's obvious that you've taken a lot of time to consider it. As a parent of an adopted child, there may be someone listening who is like, "Wow, is it, would it be right for me? What should I don't." Talk to that person. What kind of questions should they be asking? Please, just because maybe we can make some magic happen for a kid and a family tonight.
Yeah. I would say start with examining the whys. Why am I thinking about adoption? Why am I wanting to expand out my family? Even write them down, so that you can have kind of the more concrete reasoning behind it. And then I would really say to do research because there are several different types of adoption. There's adoption from foster care. There is domestic infant adoption, which is the one I'm the most familiar with. Foster care is different by state, so there's different laws and different rules in each state. There's also some international adoptions. They're very, very small these days. because a lot of countries have closed their borders in, and I will say that in a positive way. So they are able to find enough adoptive parents within their own culture and country to be able to adopt the children so that they're not needing to rely anymore on international adoption. So it's, I'm saying it, but it's in a positive manner. Mm-hmm. And then once you've researched and really are figuring out like, okay, this is something that I'm wanting to do, that I feel, called to do, then study up on open adoption and on attachment theory. So attachment theory is all around how we as humans attach to other humans. That was a big thing that, for our home study, we had to go through about 20 plus hours of just courses on attachment theory. Mm-hmm. So that's really important. But I think open adoption, so I am an open adoption advocate. Mm-hmm. And when I say that, again, 90% of adoptions are open. So why would they need advocating? They need advocating because they're not shown very often in movies, TV, and books. I would say outside of This Is Us dabbled in it a little bit, right? So there's some shows that they're showing it a little bit, but it is that relationship of, our daughter has two moms. And when we talk to her, she has two moms and she has siblings on her biological side and she has a sibling on our side. And so we talk about all of her siblings and and when they do activities in class, I make sure the teachers know, no, this is correct. She has these siblings. She has two moms. Like we encourage this. We want to talk about it. And I think that society for the longest time thinks it's like something like to be like hush hush about or to be secretive about. And so I would say that's the biggest thing is to make sure to have that understanding around open adoption and that additional love in your heart. So the way that we view it is our daughter's family is an extension of our family. Mm-hmm. She has more people that love her. Mm-hmm. And it sometimes it's tough for folks to grasp, especially adoptive moms, like I don't want to share the mom title or, things like that. But the truth is like love only multiplies. It doesn't divide. Right. So you never hear about couples that like if the mother is pregnant with child number two, we as society don't always go up to her and her partner and say, ooh, have you had the conversation with the first child? That you're going to take away half of their love and give it to the other child. Mm-hmm. No, because we know that's not how love works. Mm-hmm. So if we, open our mind and again, with these books, have the visuals there to understand that it's just another family. It's another mom that deeply loves this child. Yeah. And that's only a good thing. It's only a good thing.
We should tell everybody where they can go to find out more about Surrounded by Love and more about you.
Yes. So the books are available on Amazon. The two new versions, the Two Adoptive Dads and Two Adoptive Moms, officially launch on the 21st of October, available in ebook at the end of September. But my website is ouradoptionbooks.com. And then you can also follow me on social media, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, at Kids Books by Allison Olson.
We've had a really powerful time speaking to the author of Surrounded by Love, a great series from our guest, Allison Olson. Hey, Allison, thanks so much for being an adoptive parent, and thanks so much for being on Reading with Your Kids.
Thanks, Chad.
Hey, my friends, I have a super idea you are going to love. How about this weekend, turn your backyard cookout into a storybook celebration? Fire up the grill, crack open a few of your favorite picture books, and serve up Big Fork Brand's legendary bacon sausage. Made with nitrate-free bacon and premium pork, it's juicy, smoky, and unforgettable. Top it off with Big Fork spicy Chicago Fire sauce, and you've got a meal as bold as the characters in your favorite bedtime tale. Get 20% off your order using the promo code READ at BigForkBrands.com. That's
BigForkBrands.com, promo code READ to get 20% off, because nothing brings families together like great food, great books, and a whole lot of flavor. Big Fork Brands. READ. Grill. Repeat. Hey, my friends, you know one of my favorite parts of the day is story time. There's just something magical about snuggling up with your kids, opening a great book, and escaping into an adventure together. And let me tell you, that moment becomes even more magical when you're curled up in the softest, coziest bedding you've ever felt. That's why I'm so excited that CozyEarth.com is supporting Reading with Your Kids. Their bamboo sheets, comforters, and pajamas are unbelievably soft, naturally breathable, and temperature regulating, which means no more sweaty nights or chilly toes. Right now, Cozy Earth is offering Reading with Your Kids listeners an unbelievable and exclusive 41% off their entire site. That's right, you heard me right, 41% off. So go ahead, create your own cozy reading nook, wrap yourself and your kids up in something comfy, grab your favorite bedtime book, and turn story time into the best part of your day. Head on over to CozyEarth.com and use the promo code READ at checkout to save 41%. That's CozyEarth.com, promo code READ. Hey, real quick, we want to let you know that this episode of Reading With Your Kids is brought to you by Zivo Life. Zivo.life, Zivo Life. Hey, parents, caregivers, and book lovers, ever wish you had a little bit more zip in your step when you're reading The Very Hungry Caterpillar for the fifth or the 50th time today? Say hello to Zivo Life, your new best friend in daily wellness. Zivo Life is the world's most nutrient-dense whole plant, loaded with 50% plant protein, essential amino acids, fiber, antioxidants, and so much more. It's a powerhouse in just one teaspoon a day. And yes, it's giving people more energy, better gut health, and even healthier skin and hair. If you want to feel more energized, focused, and vibrant during your next animated storytime performance, Zivo Life might just be your secret weapon. Visit Zivo.life, Zivo.life, and use the promo code READ to get 30% off your order. It comes with a 30-day risk-free guarantee, and you've got nothing to lose except your sluggishness. Go now to Zivo.life and use the promo code READ and save 30%. Join us right now from Los Angeles in California, where our guest doesn't have to wear a hoodie like I'm wearing right now. He's here to celebrate his debut picture book. It's called The Fib. Please welcome to the show, Pedro Iniguez. Pedro, how are you? I'm sorry I butchered your name, buddy.
No, it's okay. Pedro Iniguez, that's fine. You were close.
All right.
Yeah. I'm pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing great. Other than butchering your name, but doing really good. So tell us about The Fib. I've certainly told one or two in my lifetime.
Yeah, of course. That, you know, haven't we all? The Fib is my debut picture book from Glue Books. It's about a boy named Pepe who shows up to show and tell at school, and he draws comic books, but he's a little too embarrassed to show them off. So he reaches into his pocket, he feels a ball of lint, and he tells the class that he has a very special pet. And it's a make-believe pet, but to his surprise and everybody in class, he pulls out, you know, the hand out of his pocket, and there's an actual little monster. And he keeps, you know, telling little fibs about it, and the monster keeps getting bigger and bigger. So it's kind of a morality tale about, you know, lying and how they can snowball and hurt people. So that's my debut picture book, The Fib. Yeah.
Ah, was there something in your life, or maybe something you heard from a politician on TV that inspired this book?
It's kind of an accumulation of everything in life, adults, children, and myself as a kid. You know, I would tell little fibs, little lies. You know, sometimes I'd pretend to be sick so I can go home early from school, stuff like that. You know, sometimes they start out harmless, but mm-hmm. they can have real consequences, and, you know, in life. So that's kind of a bit of everything, you know, hearing adults lie and, of course, politicians, and everybody does it. So that was my kind of way of kind of wanting to educate people about the dangers of lying and how we think they might be harmless, but they can really snowball into some dangerous territory.
Interesting.
Was there a was there something that happened in your life? Did someone tell you a fib that grew into tremendous proportions that made you think, I have to write a picture book about this?
Not anything that stands out, but, you know, there have been, like, you know, old relationships and friends and, you know, employers that maybe fudge the truth a little bit. And those things kind of, when you find out, they kind of hurt. So, yeah, it's kind of like just all of that. I took every experience that I've ever had in life, not any one particular one that stood out, but, you know, it's kind of an accumulation of all those things that kind of went into wanting to tell this story.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, when we started speaking, I was trying to think of maybe the first time I knew my parents told me a fib.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, what came up was a moment in my life, in my professional life, when I was still working in human services 4 decades ago. And my boss lied, blatantly lied. And I was horrified. I was very naive, but I was just like, man, I can't say the words that I was really thinking. But, it disappointed me tremendously, and it really soured me on the whole field.
Yeah, I've been there too with employers. There was one occasion, I think, when I was fairly new at a job, and they say, hey, you're doing great. And then, like, I think, like, a few days later, they're like, we're letting you go. And it's something like that can really – to someone else, that might have been something that, okay, I can let this go, but they can be painful lies, you know, once you find out what the truth really is. So they can have major consequences. They can hurt, lies can hurt people. And that's something that, you know, I wanted to kind of show with this book. To you, they might not mean a thing, the little lies that you tell. Sometimes you're not even intending to hurt someone, but, you know, as those lies kind of accumulate and, you know, as time goes on, those can really hurt people's feelings and emotions and stuff like that. So that's something, you know, we all have to be careful about when we do those things.
Yeah. Pedro, you were telling me before we hit record that this is your debut picture book, but that you've been writing science fiction and other books for adults. What did you just wake up one morning and thought, I think I'll write a kid's book?
Yeah. Well, so I've been writing science fiction and horror for about 16 years now. I've also won the Bram Stoker Award. I became the first person of Mexican descent to win the Bram Stoker Award, which is the highest honor in horror fiction. And I just won that in June. But I've always wanted to write children's picture books. I've always been a kid at heart. So, and I've had these ideas for a while now. So this was my first one. I sold it to Glue Books last year, and they took a chance on me, and, you know, bless their hearts for that. They really liked my vision for this, and I'm happy they did, because I feel this is something that could really connect with a lot of people, not just children, but adults too, because, you know, hey, who hasn't told a fib, you know? So that's what I really wanted to do here, and have some fun with it, because it is about a monster that keeps growing and growing, you know, the more fibs the kid tells. So, yeah, this has always been in me. I've always loved children's. I have a whole collection of children's books. I still read them. So this is a big part of me. I don't just write for adults. I also want to write for children too. So, and you know, I bring some of that horror stuff that I've been writing for adults, you know, but tone it down for kids. So, yeah, this is very much me.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. I've told this on the podcast. I was a huge consumer of horror all my life. Stephen King fan, Anne Rice fan, loved, you know, all the ghost stories and the horror, and then something happened. I became a dad.
Mm-hmm.
And I was literally in the middle of an Anne Rice novel, and my son was born, and when we got home, I picked up that Anne Rice novel, and I read about a paragraph, and I said, nah, I ain't going back here. And I haven't been able to pick him up ever since.
Oh, that's interesting. I've never heard something like that. What about that?
It certainly had something to do with becoming a dad.
Yeah.
You know, now, okay, my life has changed. My role has changed. My perception of the world has to change. I have to take care of this kid. And I don't know if I want to spend my time thinking about all the evil that's in the world.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I understand what you're saying. And sometimes it can be hard to take in. You know, there's already enough cruelty in the world, and we're here we are reading about it some more. So I did want to, you know, obviously tone this down for kids and make it spooky, not scary. And kind of the monster is kind of that representation of the lies. You know, it's like the metaphor. So I think they'll be able to catch that. And hopefully that'll, sometimes people, you know, learn differently. Sometimes the direct approach works for some of the people. They need some kind of a metaphor to kind of explain something. So that's the purpose of this monster in this story. And so it's basically representing lies we tell. So that's, I was hoping that would come across to the kids and they take some interest and fascination in the monster. So that was my way of bringing the adult horror sensibilities into a children's picture book. So I hope that connects with them.
I'm sure it was. We know that kids love spooky middle grade books. We've celebrated lots of spooky-ish books, picture books. And so I think, you know, the idea of this fib that turns into a monster and just grows and grows and grows will really connect with little guys. I'm curious. One of the things I often ask authors is what kind of conversations you think families can have as they're reading your book. And I think there are some that are obvious. But I'm thinking, and I don't mean to say this to turn anybody off from the book, but I'm thinking there's going to be a family out there that reads the book, and a kid might turn to the dad or the mom and say, "Oh, Fib, like when you told mom that that dress looked nice on her, or when you told me there's Santa Claus," or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, kids are likely to blurt out stuff like that. And it goes both ways, you know, even when they're honest, they're brutally honest. And, you know, but the same thing, you know, on the flip side of that, they'll also tell blatant fibs. You know, they just speak whatever comes to mind. And sometimes there's no filter. So that is, but, you know, that would be made easier if these conversations are had earlier, you know. So I think it's a good thing.
Yeah.
It's a good thing because, you know, if the parents are telling fibs, the children will catch that too.
Yeah.
And, you know, usually their mannerisms will, you know, trickle down to them because they're learning what they see at home. So I think that's why it's important for everyone. This book is, I think, important for children and adults, the ones, you know, reading them the stories. And because you see fibs can have consequences that we're not thinking about.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Have you had a chance to read this to a classroom or a group of kids?
Not yet. October through November, I'm pretty much booked. I'm going to be doing a lot of readings at the libraries and schools and stuff like that. I have a few reading events, so I will be deep into that. Yeah.
Well, that's a really wonderful thing. Have you done any of that with your other books? Been in front of groups of kids or because a kid audience is very different than an adult audience.
Yeah, no, you know, a lot of my other stuff is adult fiction, so I have read in front of adults, but not children yet. So, but I'm eager. I'm excited to do this. Yeah.
Awesome. I think you got to practice holding the book and then reading sideways, kind of upside.
I've been doing that. Yeah.
Now that your first picture book is out in the world and are you considering a second children's book?
Yeah, it hasn't been made public yet, but I have sold another picture book, which might be out next year. I can't say much more than that, but there's more coming. Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yes.
Yeah. Tell us about what attracts you to the horror and genre.
Well, horror genre is interesting because it allows the author to explore themes which might be seen as, you know, too unsettling or taboo or intense. And like I said, people learn differently. And sometimes people learn better through reading fiction and the metaphors that we speak to about society and our deepest fears and the things that horrify us. It's made more palatable. And sometimes I think it can trigger empathy in people, you know. It makes us connect with people that aren't ourselves. And I think it allows us to explore those horrible things in life that maybe sometimes we are hesitant to do on our own. So, and it lets us, sometimes it answers questions and sometimes it raises more questions. But I think as long as we're being engaged with the subject matter that might be too hard for us, I think we can come away a little wiser and a little bit more empathetic with life. And so I think that's one of the important things about horror fiction, just generally lets us, sometimes some people write just to entertain or scare you, but I think the really timeless stuff is the stuff that engages you and makes you ask questions. And maybe you come away with a few answers or more questions, but makes you think, as long as it makes you think about some of the horrible stuff going on in the world. I think it can make us a more empathetic society.
Yeah. As a writer for adults, you're pretty much telling the whole story. You get some input from an editor and a publisher and whatnot, but it's pretty much your story. You're telling the whole story. As a picture book author, you need to leave room for your illustrator to tell part of that story. Was it hard giving up that part of the storytelling?
No, I actually didn't leave a lot of notes. So I gave the children names. Well, besides the main character, Pepe, I gave a lot of the children who I wanted to be Latino, particularly. But a lot of the other children had names, but I didn't describe what they looked like. I didn't describe their ethnicity or nationality or anything like that. I left that interpretation up to the illustrator, and I did that on purpose. I trusted the process, and I trusted the illustrator would want to have some, you know, creative freedoms here. So what mattered to me was the story, the essence of the story, you know, the bones of it. So that was most important to me. But I was very careful not to leave a lot of, even with the monster. The monster is described here. Let me pull it up for you. The monster is described as a monster with horns like a ram, claws like a bear, wings like a bat, eyes like an owl, and a tail like a lion's. So that's the fib that Pepe tells. But I didn't actually describe, you know, the monster's color, you know, any part of the size of its body and its shape. I left that up to the illustrator, Nathan Kwan, who did an amazing job, by the way. And he brought that monster to life with just those details I gave him. And he made it green, and it has texture like a ball of lint that kind of just grew out of proportion. So he did a really great job, and I can't wait for people to see the artwork here. But yes, it wasn't hard for me to give up. I'm very collaborative by nature. I'm a team player. So, but, you know, you do give up some freedoms, but I had no issue with that.
Who are the authors that kind of you look up to or who inspired you in your writing career?
Well, with adult fiction, Ray Bradbury is a big one. Stephen King, Clive Barker. With children's books, it's a little bit more diverse. I can't say I have a favorite, but Dr. Seuss, obviously. And some of my favorite books are Where the Wild Things Are and, you know, Swimmy, Can I Be Your Dog? There's a lot. There's a lot of picture books that I grew up on. And it's just all that kind of just nurtured me and inspired me as a child and even as an adult. So it's a wide list. But yeah.
You're... ideas for horror, do they come from nightmares that you have, or is it, I'm really angry at this person and I can't lash out at him, but I can create a monster that's going to eat them?
A lot of not nightmares in particular. I think it's a lot of the things that scare me personally is where a lot of my horror writing comes from. So, like maybe if my adult fiction, something like cartel violence, that scares me. Okay. I don't like the thought of bad people doing things to, you know, other people, you know, mm-hmm. just to maintain power, basically.
Right.
And the drug trade and stuff like that. And I'd be scared of maybe being on vacation in another country and being abducted by one of these people. And then my family having to hear that, you know, there's a ransom on me and they want to, you know, stuff like that is scary. So I translate that into... maybe I'll add a cosmic horror monster in there to kind of represent these terrors, these real life terrors, you know. So that's my adult fiction. My for children, it's a little different. It can be something as what we think is trivial as a little lie, and what that represents. The there aren't so many terrors about it, but there can be some scary things that can spiral out of control if we don't check them early, like lies, you know. So it's a little different. It's more like a moral, like a moral that I'm trying to touch on for children. So it's a little different.
Yeah. It's interesting you say that you sometimes are afraid or imagine being abducted in a foreign country. I travel to Panama, which is an absolutely gorgeous country. The people are wonderful. I loved it there. But there was one morning when my beautiful wife wasn't feeling well. And I said, well, no worries. There's a pharmacy. Remember, we passed it the other day. I'll just walk down to the pharmacy and get you what you need. And on my way to the pharmacy, there was a security officer who just kind of followed me along. He would ride around a block, but then, you know, he'd just follow me all the way and back. And I remember sitting down talking to the hotel bartender that night. And I said, can you imagine? This guy thought, I'm an old man. He thought I'm going to rob someone's house. He just followed me around. And he said, so, senor, he wanted to make sure no one robbed you and took you away and kidnapped you. And
oh, wow.
I said, okay.
What a twist.
Yes, yes. No one bothered me. I had a great time. Panama is a great country to visit.
Wonderful. Good to know, actually. Yeah, that's been on my list. I wouldn't mind traveling there some point, but good to know. Thank you.
Yes, yes. We should tell everybody where they can go to find out more about the FIB and find out more about you.
Sure. So for the FIB, they can go to gluebooks.com. And for me, they can go to my website, pedroiniguez.com. And, you know, they can find everything they want right there. All the information is there. I have, like, about me, my bibliography, and all the information about every book I've ever put out. And if they want to get to know me more and what's coming out in the future. For Glue Book, they can check out the Glue Books website and have all the information. It comes out October 7th, so they'll have any information they want there. And you've got all the blurbs. I was actually fortunate enough to – there's an animated film that came out about 10, 12 years ago called The Book of Life. I don't know if you've heard of that one.
I think I did, yeah.
Yeah, it's an animated film. It was directed by Jorge Gutierrez, who's a Mexican animator, and it was produced by Guillermo del Toro. Well, the director, Jorge Gutierrez, blurbed this book, so very kind of him. That was a really nice endorsement. So that was really kind. And so that's also up on the website, and gotten some good reviews early on from Kirkus and Forward Reviews. So I'm very excited, and they can look all that up on the Glue Books website.
Awesome. We've had a great time speaking to the author of The FIB. It's a debut children's picture book from our guest, Pedro Iniguez. Iniguez.
Yes.
Why am I messing up?
It's all good. It's all good.
Pedro Iniguez, thank you so much for being on Reading With Your Kids.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. It's been a great time.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of Reading With Your Kids, and will join us for the next exciting episode of the show. In the meantime, please connect with us on social media, facebook.com/readingwithyourkids, at Reading With Your Kids on Instagram, at Jedly Magic on X. We have a great YouTube channel, youtube.com/readingwithyourkids. And, of course, our website is readingwithyourkids.com. We'd love you to visit our website. Check out our blog, check out our Certified Great Read Wall of Fame. And if you are an author, please be sure to click the author's click here button at the top of the page to find out how you can be a guest here on the show and tell thousands of Kidlit fans all over the world about your fantastic children's book. I want to thank the folks who made today's show so wonderful, starting with our guest, Allison Olson. Please be sure to check out Surrounded by Love, an open adoption story. I also want to thank Pedro Iniguez. Please be sure to check out The FIB. I want to thank my wonderful team, Fatima Khan, Chris Daugherty. I want to thank my beautiful wife for all the support and love that she brings into my life. Most of all, we all want to thank you. You are making such a difference in the world every time you read with your kids. I'll be looking for you in the next episode of Reading With Your Kids.